गदया निर्विभेदाद्रिं शस्त्रदुर्गाणि सायकैः चक्रेणाग्निं जलं वायुं मुरपाशां स्तथासिना गदया निर्विभेदाद्रिन् शस्त्रदुर्गाणि सायकैः चक्रेणाग्निं जलं वायुं मुरपाशांस्तथासिना। गदया निर्भिभेदाद्रीन् शस्त्रदुर्गाणि सायकैः चक्रेणाग्निं जलं वायुं मुरपाशांस्तथासिना। गदया निर्विभेदाद्रीन् शस्त्रदुर्गाणि सायकैः चक्रेणाग्निं जलं वायुं मुरपाशांस्तथासिना। माताजी, ओके, रीड द वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। गदया विथ हिज क्लब निर्भिभेद ही ब्रोक थ्रू अद्रीन द हिल्स। शस्त्रदुर्गाणि द वेपन ऑब्स्टेकल्स। सायकैः विथ हिज एरोज। चक्रेण विथ हिज डिस्क। अग्निम द फायर। जलम वॉटर। वायुम एंड विंड। मुरपाशान द केबल ऑब्स्ट्रक्शंस। तथा सिमिलरली असीना विथ हिज स्वॉर्ड। ट्रांसलेशन बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। विथ हिज क्लब द लॉर्ड ब्रोक थ्रू द रॉक फोर्टिफिकेशंस। With his arrows, the weapon fortification. With his disc, the fire, water and wind fortifications. And with his sword, the Murapasha cables. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददासि स्वपदान्तिकम्। मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्यमीश्वरम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा। So there is no purport for this verse, so we will continue reading. Very interesting explanation. So I'll just read this one translation again. With his club, the Lord broke through the rock fortifications. With his arrows, the weapon fortifications. With his disc, the fire, water and wind fortifications. And with his sword, the Murapasha cables. With the sound of his conch shell, Lord Gadadhar then shattered the magic seals of the fortress, along with the hearts of his brave defenders. And with his heavy club, he demolished the surrounding earthen ramparts. The five-headed demon Mura, who slept at the bottom of the city's moat, awoke and rose up out of the water when he heard the vibration of Lord Krishna's Panchajanya conch shell, a sound as terrifying as the thunder at the end of the cosmic age. Shining with the blinding, terrible effulgence of the sun's fire at the end of the millennium, Mura seemed to be swallowing up the three worlds with his five mouths. He lifted up his trident and fell upon Garuda, the son of Tarksha, like an attacking snake. Mura whirled his trident and then hurled it fiercely at Garuda, roaring from all five mouths. The sound filled the earth and sky, all directions and the limits of outer space, until it reverberated against the very shell of the universe. Then with two arrows, Lord Hari stuck the trident flying toward Garuda and broke it into three pieces. Next, the Lord hit Mura's faces with several arrows, and the demon angrily hurled his club at the Lord. As Mura's club sped towards him on battlefield, Lord Gadagraja intercepted it with his own and broke it into thousands of pieces. Mura then raised his arms high and rushed at the unconquerable Lord, who easily sliced off his heads with his disc weapon. Lifeless Mura's decapitated body fell into the water like a mountain whose peak has been severed by the power of Lord Indra's thunderbolt. The demon's seven sons, enraged by their father's death, prepared to retaliate. Ordered by Bhomasura, Mura's seven sons, Tamra, Antariksha, Shravana, Vibhavasu, Vasu, Nabhaswan and Aruna, followed their general Pitha onto the battlefield, bearing their weapons. These fierce warriors furiously attacked invincible Lord Krishna with arrows, swords, clubs, spears, lances and tridents. But the Supreme Lord, with unfailing prowess, cut this mountain of weapons into tiny pieces with his arrows. The Lord severed the heads, thighs, arms, legs and armor of these opponents led by Pitha and sent them all to the abode of Yamaraj. Narkasur, the son of the earth, could not contain his fury when he saw the fate of his military leaders. Thus he went out of the citadel with elephants born from the milk ocean, who were exuding mother from their foreheads out of excitement. Lord Krishna and his wife, mounted upon Garuda, looked like a cloud with lightning sitting above the sun. Seeing the Lord, Bhauma released his Shatagni weapon at him, whereupon all of Bhauma's soldiers simultaneously attacked with their weapons. At that moment, Lord Gadagraja shot his sharp arrows at Bhomasura's army. These arrows, displaying variegated feathers, soon reduced that army to a mass of bodies with severed arms, thighs and necks. The Lord similarly killed the opposing horses and elephants. Lord Hari then stuck down all the missiles and weapons the enemy soldiers threw at him. O hero of the Kurus, destroying each and every one with three sharp arrows. Meanwhile, Garuda, as he carried the Lord, struck the enemy's elephants with his wings. Beaten by Garuda's wings, beak and talons, the elephants fled back into the city, leaving Narakasur alone on the battlefield to oppose Krishna. Seeing his army driven back and tormented by Garuda, Bhauma attacked him with his spear, which had once defeated Lord Indra's thunderbolt. But though struck by that mighty weapon, Garuda was not shaken. Indeed, he was like an elephant hit with a flower garland. Bhauma, frustrated in all his attempts, took up his trident to kill Lord Krishna. But even before he could release it, the Lord cut off his head, and with his razor-sharp chakra, as the demon sat atop his elephant. Bhauma, frustrated in all his attempts, took up his trident to kill Lord Krishna. But even before he could release it, the Lord cut off his head with his razor-sharp chakra, as a demon sat atop his elephant. Purport by the disciples of Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, as Bhauma raised his invincible trident, Satyabhama, sitting on the Garuda with the Lord, said to Krishna, "Kill him right away." And Krishna did just that. Hare Krishna. So very wonderful series of shlokas. Definitely one of the very intimate pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam. I realized it because in the Gita Govinda by Srila Jayadeva Goswami, there is this song called Shrita Kamala, Pucha Mandal Hai. Devotees in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, they sing this song. And also the devotees who practice the Orissa dance style, there's a particular pattern of dance is called Ashtapadi. And this song is often played for the Ashtapadi, performing the Ashtapadi dance. So in that, Jayadeva Goswami mentions this particular pastime. He says, Madhumura Naraka Vinashana Hai. What is that? Madhumura Naraka Vinashana Hai. Garudasana Hai. Surakula Keli Nidana. So he's explaining that how Krishna actually killed the Mura demon and the Naraka demon. Madhu, of course, I don't know, is there in this pastime. But the song explains Madhu Mura Naraka Vinashana. And then riding on the back of Garuda. And all this Lord performed because Surakula Keli Nidana. Because he actually wanted to please the demigods. As our Sankirtan Prabhu yesterday wonderfully spoke on this pastime. That how this demon, he was actually creating a terror in the heart of all demigods. He was kind of a pure terrorist. So, I mean, nowadays terrorists have at least some tinge of a religious agenda also. Because they are doing terrorism because of some religious motivations. But there was nothing like that also for Mura demon. He was an absolute pure terrorist. And you can actually read in this purpose that shlokas that we read, right? I mean, he is using the elephants which came out from the churning of the milk ocean. And he is using the weapons of demigods. And yesterday, as Sankirtan Prabhu rightly said, you know, he stole the umbrella of Lord Varuna also. And it was such a pain. Actually, you know, losing an umbrella is not a big problem. I mean, personally, I lose an umbrella in every monsoon season. But I don't really take it so seriously. Unfortunately, you shouldn't do that. But, and Varuna, so one umbrella is lost, what's the big deal? But as he mentioned, you know, it's not a question of losing an umbrella, but the way it is snatched away. It's a disrespectful, that dishonor is very painful. When you snatch away something, or the earrings of Mother Aditi were just snatched. You know, you have this nowadays, motorbike people come and they steal Mangalsutra of ladies. So it's coming from that time, you know, stealing the earrings of Aditi. He just swiftly snatched away and nobody could stop him. And he is doing all this terror in all the planets and there hasn't been a person as in today's lingo they call Michael Al, to be able to stop him, you know, to actually been able to put a restraint on this terrorism activity. And first time now Lord Krishna is going, and he is actually going to vanish. So really, really is going to give immense pleasure to all the demigods. Surakele Nidana. So he is actually coining this entire pastime in this Gita Govinda Bhashya, in the Gita Govinda verses. And yes, so we understand that the entire description of this pastime began when Parikshit Maharaj asked that please explain to me in more details about Lord Krishna. And of course, attention to details is sign of love. We all have heard that. So Parikshit Maharaj, because he has so much love for Lord Krishna, he wants to hear in more and more and more details. And Shukadeva Goswami also, because everything that Lord Krishna does is very sweet and very pleasurable. Actually, if a destruction activity or killing activity is performed, generally people may not give detailed descriptions of that. Or you may not even want to read it. But when Lord Krishna is performing such activities, and if details are not given, then devotees want more details. Please give us more details. So of course, there is an element of love involved in it. But apart from love also, from a sadhana bhakta point of view, the details of Lord Krishna's pastime are very important. Because of course, they give a lot of pleasure to the heart. They are purifying to the heart, nevertheless. But if you see the details of Lord Krishna's pastime, they help you to create a picture in front of your eyes. For example, just take one of these verses. It is mentioned that Mura demon threw his mace at Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna, you know, he countered that mace with his mace, and that mace broke into thousands of pieces. It's not really required to mention this point, right, that mace broke into thousands of pieces. But because it's mentioned, you can actually imagine that mace coming up and Krishna just hitting that mace. And you see, a mace is made up of metal. A metal cannot be crushed into multiple pieces just like that. Right? It will just get bent or it will get broken. But here it is getting crushed into. So you can imagine the power with which Krishna must have hit it. In fact, effortlessly. But, so you can picturize it. You know, or so nicely mentioned that when Mura demon shouted in anger, his sound filled up the entire universe. It almost reverberated against the shell of the universe and came back. So, you can imagine the... So, these descriptions, they are actually helping you to see Lord Krishna's pastime. You are actually seeing Krishna through your ears. So, therefore, one of the reasons that the Shastras in Vedic Sampradaya, they are called as Darshan. Right? Often the scriptures are known as Darshan. Why Darshan? What are you seeing there? Because the details are so wonderful that you are actually able to see each and every minutest action which is happening there. It helps you to completely see it. And there's one particular aspect which actually keeps coming up in Krishna's pastime again and again, which really attracts the minds of devotees. I just thought of speaking about it. It's not that much relevant. But it's so important that, you know, Krishna has this particular habit of swiftness. So actually when you are reading this wonderful literatures and reading about this verse, you can see Krishna has been very swift in performing his activities. So this swiftness is very attractive. So you see, swiftness is not fastness. Something is very fast is not known as swift. I remember when we first attended the deity worship official seminar by Rupa Raghunath Prabhu. This must be in 1999 or 2000. He said that Pujari has to be very swift. He need not be very fast, but he has to be swift. It's very interesting. So swiftness is not just speed, but it is a very thoughtful, synchronous, organized events. And they are performed one after the other with great accuracy, without making any mistake. That is swift. All this together is the swiftness. And Krishna is so swift. For example, we were discussing sometime back in Srimad Bhagavatam about Lord Krishna coming and kidnapping Mother Rukmini. And it is so swift. He just appeared there and everyone is watching it actually. And nobody could do anything about it. And that is swiftness. Now, even before the demons could attack him, even demons can throw arrows at him, their head is already sliced off by the weapon. And it's very beautiful. And what I've realized is, this swiftness, actually, anyone who is a devotee of Krishna, and he has, you know, he has established a particular clarity of thought because of the power of his sadhana. You can see this swiftness in that devotee's character also. Just observe examples around you of devotees that you know are very advanced. See the examples of Srila Prabhupada, the way he used to walk. You know, there was, Gaurang Prabhu tells this wonderful story of Prabhupada sitting on Vyasasan and talking with guests. And then he was eating these oranges. And as he was eating the oranges, he was actually spitting the seed. And the seed was actually hitting the pillar and going into the dustbin. And he was just casually talking with many guests. But as he would eat an orange slice, he would spit out the seed would hit the pillar and go in the dustbin. Again, so one person observing it, he said, wow, so this man, how can he do it? Again and again and again. Or as one Prabhupada disciple, he was here and he was explaining about Srila Prabhupada. And he mentioned that how Prabhupada was once, he was doing the Arghya offering in the Aarti. And Arghya, you know, after one offering is done, the Arghya is left in the little bit, put back into the pot. So Prabhupada was putting into the a pot in which Tulsi was there. Tulsi Maharani was there. And as he was putting the Arghya was actually circumambulating Tulsi and watering it. And again he would do, and he was, so you can see, and he was doing it effortlessly, not that he was aiming it, okay, this is how I will do it. A very effortless movement, done in a very swift way. So, you know, people say that if you are born in, you know, Vata Prakruti, then you are very fast. And if you have Kapha Prakruti, you are very slow. But for swiftness, there is no Prakruti. You know, you have to be in Para Prakruti, then you are swift. You have to be transcendental. And such swiftness, you know, sometimes I have seen devotees, you know, they take bath and they put tilak and they put dhoti and they put shawl and all that is finished in 1 minute. And I was completely surprised, how can you do it? Because there is such clarity of thought by the power of sadhana that the swiftness easily appears. You know. And when we read about that swiftness in Lord Krishna's pastime, obviously our mind becomes very attached and attracted to him. And another reason I was thinking that these wonderful details are mentioned is that many of these details, and especially details about Lord Krishna killing the demons, they always have a deep lesson to learn. We all know Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He has written, compiled one compilation called as Demons of Vrindavan. And how each particular demon, the way he is killed, also is very, very, very pertinent. So I just want to give few observations about the way Krishna kills, or way Krishna does his particular activities towards a person who has become very proud of a particular feature. So, now let's just take the example of Putana. Okay, Krishna killed Putana when he was just 3 months old. How did he kill her? He sucked her breast and he sucked her life air along with it. Now why is this act of sucking the life air? You see, I mean, I was thinking about it, please correct me if I'm wrong. See, Putana was a great yogi. She had attained perfection by the blessings of Durvas Muni. This is what I heard from Bhakti Rasamrut Maharaj once. By the blessings of Durvas Muni, she had attained this yogic perfection. So what are yogis actually proud of? What is the thing that yogis can very easily do? Is to control life airs. Controlling life air is like a junior KG, senior KG activity for a yogi. Right? It's so simple for him. And Krishna was thinking, okay, you think that you can control life air, now try to control it. And he has sucked it out. That must have given her immense pain. But even more, how am I not able to control my life air? And how can this just boy snatch it out? That pain of ego smash is much, much bigger. Or take the example of Trunavarta. Trunavarta demon, you know, he was a whirlwind. And he could just fly and fly and fly. So he defied gravity. His unique selling feature was his defying gravity. So Krishna just held his neck and he became as powerful as a mountain and make him strike down. Okay, you want to defy gravity, now experience gravity. What it actually means. Krishna just made him fall down. Take example of Keshi demon. He's a horse. So horse is known for power. So even engines are known as horsepower and all that, right? I mean, if you want to measure a pump's capacity, they say horsepower. How many horse, BHP, brake horsepower, like that. Horse is supposed to be very powerful, right? So he was a horse. When he would run, it is mentioned that by the vibration of his running, sometimes women would have miscarriages. That was his power. Such a powerful horse. But horse also has one particular feature, that he can be controlled through his mouth. Horse can only be controlled through his mouth. So Krishna knows this very well. So as soon as Keshi demon came in front of him, Krishna just put his hand in his mouth. It became like a hot burning rod. And he couldn't do anything about it. So yes, you feel that you are a horse, you are very powerful, but my dear friend, there is something which you don't know, which I know, that you can be controlled just by putting hand in your mouth. And Krishna did that. So Lord Krishna is very expert. A demon may take a particular form or particular shape or anything, Krishna exactly knows how to counter it. And I remember many, many years back on the day of Janmashtami, Radhanath Maharaj was speaking on the same pastime. And he said that this Murapasha cables, he explained that Krishna released his Sudarshan Chakra, and that Sudarshan Chakra did short circuit in all these cables. So you are very proud of putting these live electric wires, but you are not knowing that live electric wires can easily be subjected to short circuits. And Krishna did that. So Krishna has this unique way of... Okay, so what is the lesson for us to learn? The lesson for us to learn is, you see, no matter who you are, or you may have a particular feature or a particular good quality, which you think that this is my best thing that I have. But if you become proud of it, you know, Krishna has a power to create public mockery out of it. You know, he can actually do it. We read the story of Keshav Kashmiri, right? He was so proud of his eruditeness about, you know, composing verses. He could just compose random verses. And one of the verses he composed, and Lord Krishna in the form of Nimai, Lord Gauranga, took just one verse, and he completely shattered that verse to pieces. Right? And after Krishna did that, all the disciples of Nimai Pandit, they started laughing at him. He actually created a public mockery out of it. So you are so proud of your Sanskrit verses, just see what useless is this habit. Or we even see the entire pastime of Shamantaka jewel, Satrajit. You know, he was proud of this jewel. But because he hesitated in giving this jewel to Krishna, he did not offer that jewel to Krishna. That same jewel became the cause of his death. In fact, brutal death. So what devotees need to know is that, yes, you may be given a particular power or a particular good quality that you have, but if you hesitate to use it in Krishna's service, if you don't wholeheartedly offer it to Krishna, or if you become proud of it, then you never know, you can be subjected to public mockery in short period of time. I mean, you can still become proud of it, but then at your own risk. So Krishna wants to show this to us. So I was discussing this particular topic with one devotee, and the topic was that what is more important, whether hard work or smart work. So if you read the management books, you know, they often say that smart work is more important than hard work. If you work very smart, that will give you more success. But then I was trying to explain to him that yes, smart work is of course more important than hard work. But can you impress Krishna with your smart work? Because Krishna is the source of all smartness. So Krishna is not going to get impressed by the smart work. What is Krishna impressed with is your hard work. Why? Is Krishna the source of hard work? Yes, in terms of ability he is. But the hard work actually is an expression of your devotion. It's your own desire. Your hard work is not, Krishna is not going to make you do hard work. It's because you want to do it, because it's your desire. You want to offer worship to Krishna. You will perform that particular hard work. Because if you see in this entire world, if you want to ask that, what is it that is actually your property? Because everything belongs to Lord Krishna. But do you have something which is your own property? And that is your desire. That your desire is your own property. Krishna has just given that free will to you. You can decide the way you want to do it. And if you want to utilize that desire to perform hard work to please Lord Krishna, then Krishna will be very happy. Even in the entire episode of Mother Yashoda, when she was trying to bind Lord Krishna again and again and again, it is very clearly mentioned that Krishna, being pleased by her hard work, he allowed finally to bind himself. So Krishna was not pleased with her devotion. Krishna was pleased with her hard work. So you take any successful devotee, including Srila Prabhupada, or any Acharya in the past, even Madhavendra Puri, these people have been performing extreme hard work for pleasure of Lord Krishna. Because that hard work is your own quality. So when our own quality we offer to Lord Krishna, Krishna is very pleased. And then, finally this story, as it goes ahead, it ends at this point where we see that Satyabhama, actually being very eager and being very anxious at that particular point, when this Naraka demon, he threw this trident at Lord Krishna. So Satyabhama became very anxious and immediately she said, "Kill him." And then Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra and sliced his head off. So in that same lecture also, Radhanath Maharaj, and again in the purport also, it's clearly mentioned here by which Acharyas like Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that why Satyabhama was specifically chose to be taken along with Lord Krishna. Why he could have taken any queen, but why he took Satyabhama? Two reasons. Because she was a chivalrous princess and she would like to go out and do fights. Just like in the time of Ramayana, Dasharath Maharaj would take Kaikeyi with him for fighting. Why he wouldn't take Kausalya? Why he wouldn't take Sumitra? Because Kaikeyi had that chivalrous nature. So he would take Kaikeyi. So similarly, Krishna here, he took Satyabhama because she has a chivalrous nature. She would enjoy that fight. And the second reason is because Satyabhama is an expansion of Mother Earth. And Bhaumasur, because he was the son of Mother Earth, so it's mentioned that when Varahadev lifted Mother Earth, yesterday Sankirtan Prabhu said it, this particular son was born and his name was Bhoma, and later on because of association of Banasur, he became Bhaumasur. So because Narakasur was the son of Bhumi and Bhumi's expansion is Satyabhama, Krishna thought it wise to discuss with her or take her permission before killing the child. So according to scriptures, even if the child is as notorious as this personality, Bhaumasur, if the child has to be killed, the mother's permission needs to be taken. And this is a very consistent behavior in the life of Lord Krishna, I mean, in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Even when Lord Krishna appeared as Lord Ramchandra, and this I was hearing from the lecture of our Nityanand Prabhu, and he mentioned it very nicely, that what was the reason that Shurpanakha actually was not killed? When Shurpanakha actually attacked Mother Sita to kill her, when she actually came to seduce Lord Ramchandra, and that whole effort was unsuccessful, and later on she attacked Mother Sita, Lord Ram only asked to cut her nose and ears. And Lord Ram didn't ask to kill her. Why? Because Mother Sita was present there. And in front of the mother, the child cannot be killed. So although Shurpanakha is a demon, but from the absolute perspective, because Mother Sita is a supreme mother, the child cannot be killed without permission. And Lord Ram did not have time to ask the permission of Mother Sita. Can I kill her? So there was no time. So okay, the punishment was given. Okay, just cut off the nose and ears. Because you cannot kill. And therefore, because Mother Sita was in Ashok Vatika, and because Ravan was actually fighting in the battle, therefore it is mentioned that Lord Ramchandra could kill Ravana. Otherwise, if Sita was present there, if the entire battle would have happened in Ashok Vatika, probably Lord Ramchandra would have even spared his life. Because in front of the mother, the child cannot be killed. And Krishna, although he is the lawmaker and he can overrule any law that he wants to overrule, but still he follows this law. That in front of the mother, the child cannot be killed without taking her permission. Or the child cannot be killed without taking mother's permission. Now, in light of all this, you can understand that how abortion is so sinful. Where the mother herself makes a decision that, okay, I want to go and finish off the child. I understand that there are certain medical reasons for which, you know, sometimes devotees are advised, okay, perform a abortion. Because maybe the child who is going to take birth, he has some problems or he has some defects. So better medical reasons are there. Now, I am not a person who can give verdict on what should be done and who should not be done. It's a person's personal choice. But in my own life, I have seen two devotees. We cannot mention their names. But when their wife was pregnant, it was told to them that the child who is going to take birth will have defects. And they still went ahead and allowed the child to take birth. So it's a person's choice, you know. What I'm trying to say is this act, and many more abortions are done not because there is a medical problem. They are done because you just don't want them. So you may ask the question that why is it happening? Because actually, the love of mother for a child is almost considered as next to the love of Krishna and his devotee. The example that is given of selfless service in love is always of that of a mother. Because mother gets up in the night, the child is crying, she needs to feed her or him, or the mother needs to, you know, clean the potty or whatever in the night. So many things happen, right? Luckily, I'm just getting this story. I heard it in one of the lectures of Govind Prabhu. So this was a story between, I'm just sharing it with you, it was nice. Story between Akbar and his mother. So once Akbar, the Shahenshah Akbar, he went to his mother and he said that, "Mother, I love you. In fact, I love you so much that I love you more than yourself, more than you love me." And the mother said that, "No, you can never say like this." She said, "You can never say like this." So he said, "No, of course." So mother said, "Okay, no problem." Of course, Akbar and all is like, it could be any king and any any mother, right? So the mother said, "Okay, if you don't mind, you can sleep next to me on the bed. Show me how much you love. So he slept. And suddenly in the night, he sensed something wet on the bed. And he immediately got up. "Hey, what is this?" So the mother said, "Okay, my dear son, I have become old now. You know, I can't always get up from my bed and go to washroom and all that. So sometimes such accidents happen." And he became so angry. He just started shouting at her, "You know, what nonsense. You know, I am a king and how could you do something like this and like that?" So mother said, "My dear child, when you were a small child, you had done it so many times. And I have continued with it to take care of you. And once it is happening to you," actually what she had done is she had just taken the glass and put the water there. Because she wanted to show him the lesson. "But once it's happening to you, you are becoming so angry." He said, "Therefore I say that you can never love me more than I love you." Just accept it as a fact. Now, this much is the mother's love. I'm just giving the story as to set an example. If that is the standard of mother's love, how is it happening nowadays that a woman herself is killing her own child? How is it happening? So what we should understand is that as Kali Yuga is progressing, this element of compassion and love is actually disappearing. Right? Even Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, the feminine aspect of Lord Krishna is more merciful than the Lord Krishna himself. Because in feminine aspect there is more love and more compassion. But in Kali Yuga we see that even in feminine aspect there is no love and no compassion. Or we read in this book of His Holiness Radhakrishna Swami, right? When he was passing the border of Pakistan, and there was a woman who didn't allow me, but then there was a man who actually allowed him. So, how is it that this element of compassion is disappearing so fast, even from the hearts of feminine personalities? We should understand this is the power of Kali Yuga. It's the power of Kali Yuga. What is in it for us to learn from this particular event that is happening? We should understand that if it is happening to people outside, if it is happening people who are naturally supposed to be very compassionate, then it can also happen to me. And as soon as this element of brutality, you sense that is entering in my heart. You see, when one is a normal devotee, sadhaka, he may not experience that brutality entering into his own heart. But as soon as he is given some power, right, as soon as given some authority, I personally remember in one particular Vaishnava gathering, there was a crowd control happening. And this person who was doing crowd control was given this, this police has this long, I don't know what it's called, in Marathi we call it Sota. I don't know in English, that particular bar. And that person suddenly and somehow in India, you know, I don't know why, but nobody follows queue. We are not trained right from childhood to follow queue. So there also, whether you become a devotee, you become Paramahamsa, whatever, I think, that nature of not following queue. I sometimes see this on Chariot of Lord Jagannath also. I mean, in There are just so many people just jumping. Actually, if you just follow queue, everyone can embrace Lord Jagannath. But there is just so much of chaos. And Jagannath is going to be there for one whole day, one whole night. But still there is so much. And you feel like, okay, all this was Kanishtha Adhikari behavior, or this is just natural quality of all of us. You can't make it out, right? Even a train is completely vacant, people will just jump. Because right from childhood, I think somehow we have been trained that, okay, there are limited resources and there are unlimited people. In India, there are unlimited people. There are limited resources. So you have to grab your seat in the train. You have to grab your ration. You have to grab your darshan in the first row. You have to grab Jagannath's embrace. You have to grab. Some of that training or whatever. You know? So, where I was actually talking from. Crown control, So this devotee, the certain devotees became very uncontrolled, and a person started hitting them. So I was like, you know, no matter how bad a devotee is behaving, you know, there are certain different scenarios where hitting can be used. Now I remember once I was walking, on Friday only, I was walking from the temple, and then one devotee, he brought one person, one brahmachari. He said, you know who is he? I said, yeah, I know he's a devotee. He works there in that room there. He said, no, he's a thief. And started beating him with hand. So the person had done, actually, he was not a devotee anyways. He was just a thief. So that is a separate scenario. I'm not talking about that. But, you know, using a power to physically harm a person. If it is happening, you should understand that yes. Because that's what Yamadutas do. Yamadutas will, they will just follow the order. They will, but devotees cannot become Yamadutas. We are Vishnu Dutas. A devotee is supposed to be Vishnu Duta. I mean, he starts becoming like Yamaduta, then the whole story has changed. You cannot take the control in hand and start becoming a Yamaduta. You have to become a Vishnu Duta only. You can go and save a person's life by giving him devotional service. By offering, a devotee is a carrier of Radharani's mercy. So, he can't afford to be brutal. At some times, he may have to be strict. And may have to even shout, or may have to even use his power or aggression as required. But then he should be very careful to sense in his heart if that element of brutality is coming. And if it is coming, then you have to somehow take association of devotees, confess in front of your spiritual master or whatever is required. But then get that element of brutality out from your heart. It's very, very wrong. And for most of us who are grihasthas, we should be very vigilant in seeing if that element of brutality is entering in the hearts of children. I remember one devotee with great concern coming to me. He says, Prabhuji, my daughter kills ants. She just sits and she starts killing ants, and I'm very concerned about it. Because he was so vigilant that this element of brutality doesn't enter the heart of his child. He was so particular about it. So as grihasthas, it's a very, very important thing that we need to follow. Because we can't afford to be like that. Because we are actually the carriers of Radharani's compassion. So I didn't have much to say in these two purports. Only these two points. That how a devotee needs to offer whatever he has to Krishna. And if he is not offering properly, then you know anything can go wrong. And then secondly, that we should be very, very careful in avoiding this brutality entering in our hearts. And Lord Krishna personally showing by examples that without the consent of the mother, he did not feel appropriate to kill the child. You have to be very sure that he is doing correct. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, we can take. Otherwise, we can end here. Granthara Sriman Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.